Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Ruthie, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back. So first of all, I wasn't in Washington at the press conference, but I was glued to my television in Tel Aviv, and as most of the world. And I have to tell you what my initial reaction was. You're going to be surprised. I burst out laughing at the audacity and the brilliance of the move. I just couldn't believe my ears. I'm not the only one. I mean, the entire world's jaw dropped on the spot. And what was brilliant about it was not that the plan is necessarily viable in the near future or in the far future. We don't know. There are many problems with it. But see, the beauty of Trump is because he's not an expert in the Middle East, he gets right to the core of the issue. He uses sound logic, and all the experts in the Middle East up until now have not been able to solve this problem, not just since the October 7th war, but in general. So he comes along and he says, well, I don't know. It seems to me the whole place is in rubble. Let's clean it up. Let's help the poor Palestinians living there under the rubble get out from under it and live in peace and harmony and clean homes elsewhere. And then we will fix it up and make it beautiful and make it a wonderful place for Palestinians and anybody else who wants to live there to do so. Okay,
yes.
So it sounds logical, right? But the beauty of it, in my opinion, is not whether it actually comes to fruition, but rather he just totally destroyed the false notion of Palestinian statehood.
Mm-hmm. Yes, without saying those words, right? And that's
exactly
the key. And so
exactly.
You know, I always usually every morning when I start out, because I do news in the morning show and then this show's from 10 to noon. So I'm on. I usually start out and talk about what day it is. Today is day 490 with Israel. This is post October 7th. And thinking about these hostages still somewhere being held against their will after being kidnapped and just the horror that has happened. 490 days later, the fact that we're still talking about this, Ruthie, is shocking to me. And I had read what Keith Siegel, the first American, released. You know, what the freed hostages have told us, horrible stories of deprivation and just saying you've got to release the rest of the hostages. Now, I know tomorrow we're looking forward to more hostages being released, but we don't see the names of those men. Do you have any more information as far as the hostage release back and forth and then the reaction, because you're right there in Tel Aviv, the reaction from the people?
Okay, so first of all, it's interesting you mentioned the number of days. I will mention another way of putting that, and that is that today is February 7th, which makes it exactly a year and 4 months since these people were taken hostage. And other than three remaining ones from who have been there for the last 10 years. But now there are still 79 hostages in Gaza. 79 people. Think how many that is. It's far fewer than those that out of the 251 who were abducted on October 7th. But still, 79 is a huge number, and the number of hostages to be released tomorrow is three. Okay? And by the end of the first phase of this ceasefire hostage release deal, there will only be 33 released, if Hamas abides by the agreement, 33, eight of whom are supposedly, according to Hamas, will be dead bodies. Right. So just realize how awful those 79 people, they are individuals. They are among them again also Shiri Bivas, this young mother and her two babies, one who was 9 months old when he was abducted, and now he's 2 years old, and his brother, who is now 5 years old, if they're alive, of course. And so that's important. Now, Hamas has not released the names. It was supposed to, 2 hours ago, release the names of which three male hostages, this time men, are coming out. and they haven't released the names. Now, they pulled this stunt once before, last time, and last week or the week and a half ago. And when they did that, their punishment, quote unquote, was that they had to release an additional three prior to the Saturday. They had to release three more on the Thursday before that. Now, there's a lot of talk in Israel, especially among Netanyahu and Trump detractors, okay, on the left, who are concerned that Trump's statement about taking American control over Gaza is going to harden Hamas's stance and is therefore responsible for their not having released the names yet. I don't agree with this. Hamas did this before. Hamas is a terrorist organization. It doesn't need a statement from Trump in order to harden its stance. That's number one. Number two, Hamas, when it pulls this stunt, what does it do? It says, well, we don't know exactly, the hostages we were going to release are also with Islamic Jihad, that's another terrorist group in Gaza, or they're with in civilian homes and things like that. I find it hard to believe that they won't come up with the names and that they won't release the hostages tomorrow, because especially with Trump's backing, clear backing, and he even used the words, "We'll have to be more violent." If you recall, when he was asked by a reporter at the White House what would be his response if Hamas doesn't comply, he said something like, "We'll have to use more violent means," or something. So I don't think we're going to see Hamas withholding the hostages, but it may be grandstanding to show other terrorists around the world and Arabs and leftists in Europe and America that Trump is responsible for hindering this move.
Yes. What was, and this is where your expertise, because you're listening and watching all of this happening, but you also, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, you were as an advisor to him. And what did you see differently, perhaps, or what were you watching for? I always look for that, like the body language. Some people thought that, for example, Prime Minister Netanyahu was surprised by what Trump was saying. Did you think that this was a surprise to Netanyahu?
No, I didn't think that. I also was watching his body language carefully. But I didn't think he was surprised because the meeting that he held with Netanyahu, that Trump held with Netanyahu prior to the press conference, was supposed to be about an hour long, and it ended up being something like 3 hours. No, it's not exact. It's not an exact number, but it was very, very long. And so I imagine that what was discussed there wasn't only future plans and Iran and all that, but was this. I imagine he informed Netanyahu, who he might not have told, were the members of his administration who were present, because remember when he asked them to stand up, he said, Vice President Vance, stand up. And he told all his team and he praised them and they all stood up. And I think they were probably surprised. And I have a reason for thinking that. And it has to do with the section of the MAGA movement and some people in his administration who tend towards more isolationism. Mm-hmm. But that's another issue. I don't think Netanyahu was surprised. I think that the expression on his face was a mixture of satisfaction, pleasure, but also maybe a bit of apprehension how this was going to go down. I'm no expert on body language. I'm no expert on body language, okay? But that's how I read it.
Like, because that's just it. You're right. That I inferred, and you're the expert here, so I'll leave this to you. But what I inferred was when I was watching the Prime Minister's body language, I thought, because it was almost like, they have no idea what's coming. You know what I mean? Like, I think the opposite of what a lot of people, I think that Netanyahu was one of the few people right there that we were looking at who knew what was about to be unleashed. And even it took a second for people in the press corps to hear it. I don't know if they weren't fully listening Do you know what I'm saying? And then all of a sudden they went,
I do.
He said, what?
Yes. Do you know, do you realize that everybody I know in the United States, also in Israel, but because in Israel, this was at about 2 o'clock in the morning when this press conference was live. Okay. So the people I know in the United States, it was a flurry of text messages and phone calls, and everyone was saying, he said, what? And somebody else said to me, I had to play it back twice just to make sure that that's what he said. Yes. And that's why I burst out laughing, because it was clear nobody saw this coming, but not just because they didn't see it coming from Trump and Netanyahu, et cetera, but because this idea nobody saw coming. Do you realize that since October 7th, the especially the anti-Netanyahu crowd had been screaming, what about the day after? You don't have a day after plan. What about the day after the war, the day after Hamas, the day after? Why aren't he has no plan for the day after? And they've been yammering about this. And so some people said, well, maybe we could have the Gulf states part of the Abraham Accord states and some combination of them and the Palestinian Authority that would take over Gaza or something like that, or partial Israeli military control just until, just for security purposes around the Rafah and Netzarim crossings and things like that, and the Philadelphia corridor, all of these things between Gaza and Egypt. Nobody dreamed of an America taking over. This was, the others, they said, well, international forces, which is really a euphemism for UNIFIL, mm-hmm. and we know how well that works out with the UN. So the point here was that it was a shock because the suggestion of the United States doing it mm-hmm. never was uttered on anyone's lips.
Yes.
So
I love it. What was the, so I do want to, I know we have to go, but I wanted to ask you really quick, as far as the Abraham Accords, which of course the bilateral agreements, right? And that was, that was something that was a huge piece, centerpiece really, I think, of Trump's first round when he was president, that it was a focus of his, right? That he wanted, many even viewed Hamas doing what they did as a disruption to try to disrupt all of that and try to break that up. It looks like now that's back on track. So first of all, where do you think that goes next? Is it fast track that we deal with this very important, Arab-Israeli normalization peace treaty that leads to business and peace and prosperity, hopefully, number one. And then number two, the reaction there. You're there, Ruthie, you would know the people's reaction.
Yes. Well, something very similar to the United States. I think I've said this to you before in our last conversation. Mm-hmm. There are many parallels between the United States and Israel, and the parallels also have to do with the internal arguments going on between left and right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, you call them maybe liberals and conservatives, we call them left and right, but it's basically the same idea. Okay. And so when you talk about what the reactions are, they're very different depending on the political camp you're in. But what we are seeing is that Saudi Arabia is still paying lip service to Palestinian statehood. It's saying, no, without a Palestinian state, we can't move forward. Now, you see, the Saudis really don't care about the Palestinians. Meanwhile, the Egyptians and Jordanians don't want any Palestinian crossing their borders mm-hmm. because they hate them. And they know that every time the Palestinians enter a country, it gets destabilized and they try to overthrow the regime, etc. The Saudis have a different tack. That is their lip service to the Arab world. And what they really care about, if I'm telling you, if there were a complete victory right now over Hamas, and I mean a clear one, not where you see the Hamas headbands and crowd throngs of Hamas supporters in the streets of Gaza surrounding released hostages, okay? If they saw it was completely defeated, I think they would stop talking about a Palestinian state. They want to make sure that Israel is a strong horse and America is. And I think Trump showed that. There's a new sheriff in town, and we're doing things differently. And with the stroke, literal and figurative stroke of his pen with all his executive orders, they're seeing that he means business. So I think that maybe their public statements are very different from what's going on behind the scenes. And you'll remember that when Trump was asked, well, Egypt and Jordan said they won't take in any Palestinians. And Trump's response was, they will. Mm-hmm. Basically, yes, they will.
Yes, they will.
I mean, he's asserting himself as the leader of the free world and the boss of the non-free world. And that is the job of the president of the United States. And we've seen presidents, particularly Biden, who was anything but a leader of anything, let alone the free world. He wasn't even leading his own party. Mm-hmm. And in Obama's time, the 8 years of Obama, Obama purposely said we're leading from behind. Obama's ideology was not that America shouldn't be greater than any other country.
Yeah. Well, we see where that got us. So you are also, Ruthie Bloom, you're also the host of the podcast Israel Undiplomatic. Anything you want to plug as far as, because you're front and center on this huge issue that remains in the headlines here.
Yes, well, I'd like to, as anybody who's interested can watch our podcast on YouTube or hear it on iTunes, Apple Tunes, what else, Spotify, etc. Mm-hmm. It's called Israel Undiplomatic. It's all on JNS TV. But I also, if we're already plugging something, yeah. I'd like to plug JNS's first international policy conference that will be held on April 28th at the Waldorf Hotel in Jerusalem. And registration is free. It is free to attend. And anyone who wants to register for it may do so either at the bottom of my podcast or on jns.org on the website.
Wonderful. Well, we'll keep plugging that before April. Ruthie Bloom, thank you so much. And Godspeed. But thanks for joining us this Friday.
Thank you, Don.
Don Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.